Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have a very fun guest. Her name is Marion Baker, and she is author of The Lime Green Plastic-Covered Couch. Marion, like so many other women, struggled through years of internet dating. She was at her dating wit's end, tired of packing up her last remnants of dignity to leave yet another failed relationship. That was only months before the one. She was ready to give up. Single, in her mid-40s, she didn't have a clue to the secret for lasting relationships. The Lime Green Plastic-Covered Couch is a serious book with a light-hearted touch. Marion takes the reader through much of her own unsuccessful dating history and shows the steps she took to her own success, a happy marriage. Through revealing her own self-defeating patterns, including the commonly shared fantasy dream of a relationship that would save her, she then reveals what she did differently. More importantly, finding a devout spiritual path was a large part of her own success model. Now known as the Love Therapist, Marion is a registered therapeutic counselor specializing in transpersonal therapy. Her book is like a personal counseling session for her readers. Marion shares her own and other women's love stories, some successful, some not, then comments on the stories from a counseling perspective. Marion's book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to her book there in the show page description. And you can also visit Marion's website, which is thelimegreenplasticcoveredcouch.com. And I do have a direct link to that in the show page where you can find out more about the book, free videos, blog, and so much more. So with that, I would like to welcome Marion to the show. Good day, Marion.
Good day, Robert. Thank you so much. I'm excited to finally be on Bite Me Radio.
Well, I'm very excited to have you here. And you know, for today's show, we can be Bite Me as much as you want. So, but you know, it was so funny. You know, the story behind that is when I first started my show, gosh, I'll do my 4-year anniversary next week. My domain provider sent me the .me domains as being available. And years ago, probably 15, 20 years ago, I had an astrology reading where the astrologer kind of really nailed it on the head, saying that my goal in this life or my purpose in this life was bringing inspiration to Earth. So that BITE acronym has stayed with me for years and years and years. So when I got that email saying that the .me was available, I thought, oh, this is just too good to be true.
Scooping that one up.
I know. So I immediately went to check and see if it was available, and of course it wasn't. So I was like, okay. I know. So I had to kind of stick in the radio part. So, but anyway. But on occasion, when I'm not real happy with someone, I do remove the radio. So
the best part is I love your introduction because your voice sounds so sweet and soft. and you're saying, welcome to Bite Me Radio.
Yeah. But yeah, there's the dual side. You know, you got to be careful.
We all have it.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So, well, anyway, I'm really looking forward to today's show. You know, every now and then I'll have, intuitive guests on and call-ins. And, like, it's the two most popular questions are, when am I going to find my love in the job? You know, those are like, they kind of go hand in hand. Those are the two biggest things. And and truly I think that love, really kind of trumps the job even. But so I'm really glad to have you here. So hopefully you can, you know, help some of our listeners wade through some of the, you know, the challenges and maybe get some clarity for what that is. Let's start with, I usually like to have my guests give just a little bit more of a background than I did in the introduction about, you know, about their path and kind of how it got, how you got to the point of writing about and becoming the love therapist.
Yeah, oh, thank you. The interesting part was I was in my, I think, late 30s and finally kind of stepping into 40 and had been the master of the two-year relationship. And after 2 years, I always used to think, okay, this guy's bored with me. He's going to be turfing me any second anyway. So I would just throw on my backpack, throw my hands in the air, and run away screaming from any relationship. You know, so I had a history of struggling in relationship. And finally, when I was 40, I thought, okay, enough. I want to figure out what it actually takes to have a lasting relationship. I don't want to do this anymore. And it was actually that led me to do my counseling program. Because in my counseling program, I'm as I learned to counsel for 3 years, I'm also counseled. So it's like we have to take what we learn into our own lives and straighten out our own lives as we learn how to counsel. So that, and my struggle was relationships. And so I really got some serious help from my teachers and my classmates, and they, you know, they kind of kicked my butt around a bit. You know, and said, well, here's your opportunity. It's like, what are you going to choose? And so a year later, I was married. And, you
wow.
know, after 3 years, I was not only, I was a counselor and I was married. So, so I'm 4 years happily married now and wanting to stay, like not wanting to run away. So it's been a great, amazing journey.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful, you know, and I understand, you know, quite often, you know, that whole therapy training aspect, and I mean, it's really important for you to kind of have your stuff together so that, you know, when it comes time to talking about other people that you can come from, you know, a balanced and, you know, in a very informed position.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but, I mean, how can you take someone else through the layers of their psyche when you don't know what yours are? Like, I would find that impossible.
You
know,
yeah.
There's definitely a pattern to our layers. No matter what the story is, there's a pattern to the layers, and it's just identifying the pattern.
Yeah, that's one thing. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, self-defeating patterns and that kind of thing, because I really,
mm-hmm.
You know, as I was reading, you know, that does seem to be a critical element in that. But I've got to ask, like, up front right now, why the lime green plastic-covered couch? I mean, that
yeah,
is...
it's always everybody's first question.
It has to be.
What the heck is a lime green plastic-covered couch? Well, to tell you the story about that, I'm going to have to share the first couple of chapters of my book, so you're going to have to
sure.
bear with me for two chapters. So chapter one is every girl's fantasy dream. Like, I had... dated my husband 20 years ago, and I didn't realize it, but he said, I was madly in love with you and I would have married you then. And I had no idea, like, until we met again, and we met again on Facebook. And I was surprised, but I mean, I was young then. I wasn't serious. I was still, you know, still out and having fun and a party girl, and, you know, wasn't looking at settling down or marriage or anything. And when we got back together again this time, he said, you know what, I walked away from that wondering how I would have had to been different for you to want to stay. And, yeah, and, like, that's what every woman does when they hear that, because that's their biggest, you know, it's women's fantasy. Like, it's like, I want somebody to want me that bad. You know, and then the rest of the chapter is our romance, which, you know, when we got married, he whisked me away to this beautiful boutique hotel on the west coast of Vancouver Island, and we got married on the beach. And when we got back to our hotel room, it was like rose petals and candles and, you know, soaker tub filled with bubble bath and champagne. Like, every girl will be sighing and swooning going, that's what I want, that's what I want.
Uh-huh.
And then there's chapter two. So chapter two is my everyday reality, which is the first time I went over to my husband's apartment, I had to shuffle down the hallway sideways to get into the apartment because his apartment, his hallway was filled with Rubbermaid tubs full of his stuff that he couldn't bear to throw away. And, you know, his apartment was covered in sports paraphernalia, like, you know, his collection of sports, you know, football lighters and football blankets and hockey this and all his mugs in a row. And I was like, oh, my God, please just shoot me now. And then one time I went over and I came into this apartment filled with furniture covered in lime green plastic. And I'm like, what is going on? He said, Chico down the hall said he had bed bugs. I'm protecting us from bed bugs. I'm like, okay, there we go. So, you know, this is the point in my past when I would have totally thrown my hands up in the air and run away screaming. And it was in that moment that something really struck me, and I realized that. You know, I was like, okay, this is my choice point. And what actually happened was this lime green couch became like a beautiful memory because I had to bring all my newfound relationship skills into the relationship and tell him, you know what, I love you, but I can't live like this. Like, if we're going to do something, we have to work together to do something differently. And, you know, it's going to be your choice. Like, you have to decide if you can try something different because, like, this is your life too. How do you want to work with me? And he said, yeah, you know, I'm glad that you asked because I'd rather have you than my sports mugs. So we did. We learned how to cohabitate in a way that works for both of us.
Yeah. Well, that's a wonderful story. You know, and it's, you know, the idea, I love the term that you use, choice points, you know, because I really think, you know, there are those moments, you know, that we come to, you know, making a critical decision whether or not we're going to continue on. And, you know, and those occur even when you're in a relationship, before you are in a marriage relationship. I mean, they occur all the time.
Constantly. And, you know, the beautiful thing is there always an opportunity to bring you closer together. Because, like, that moment when we had to talk about the lime green couch, we actually got closer together after that. And, you know, there's continual moments like that in my relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, it is something. Now, I've been together in my relationship for 25 years, just celebrated 25 years.
So
I've had many a choice point, you know, going on.
Many choice points. That's right.
But that's okay.
Am I going to love you right now?
So, but I mean, you know, but it is, you're true. I mean, it's true that, you know, they are points where the relationship, you know, either becomes stronger or it doesn't continue. And they generally speaking, you know, they truly make the bond stronger if you make the decision, if you choose to work at, you know, whatever that, you know, decision that needs to be made.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's like one of the things that I learned in counseling that it was also that it's not just about choice points about, you know, our environment, but there's choice points about myself. And, like, to give you an example, the other day, like, have you ever seen that bumper sticker that says, don't believe everything you think?
Okay, yes, I have.
That's my favorite bumper sticker. And so those are the more of the choice points that I'm continually coming up against is, okay, so right now I'm thinking he's a jerk. Am I going to actually question that, or am I going to just go on thinking he's a jerk? And like an opportunity came up the other day where because we sit around and we talk about our future and what we want to do and where we want to go. And we talked about, you know, where we want to live. And he just talks about how, you know, I wanted a fireplace and he wants this and he wants that. And the one thing that I said was I'd love to have a place on a lake. And he said something like, oh, there'll be lots of lakes. Or, you know, like something like that. And I made it mean, in that moment, I made it mean that he felt that my needs weren't important. Like I heard it as a dismissal and that my needs weren't important and that his needs are the only one that counts. So I started to get really mad. And then I stopped another choice point. Like I stopped myself and I said, okay. And I shared that with instead of getting angry, I said, what I heard you say is that my needs don't matter and that you don't care if I have a lake. And he said, no, that's not what I'm trying to say. He said, we'll have a place that'll be around a billion lakes and you can have your choice. And so that's a whole different message. You know, he wants to be happy. And so those are always my choice points about, but I had to, you know, learn about myself and delve a little about what I make it mean when he says something, and so that I can be vulnerable and say, hey, this is what I'm making this mean. Can you tell me what's really going on here? And I never am right. I'm never right. Whatever I want to, you know, whenever I get upset, I'm never right.
Oh, no. Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, because that whole process, you know, that self-discovery and working things out, that works with the dating process as well as
totally.
The relationship process as well, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you know how women have the list? Have you ever been, like when you were dating when you were younger, did you ever sit across from somebody that had the list and you knew you had to measure up?
The dreaded list.
Like, don't you feel sorry for guys when they're sitting there?
Yes.
Like, okay, well, you drink red wine. Okay, you wear Gucci shoes. Yeah, tick. But, you know, I actually have given a new take on the list in my book that I promise women will be much more effective than any list that they could put together. Even if it's like, oh, I want him to make me feel this way, or I want him to be funny so we can laugh together. I say, you know, tear it up, burn it, run away from it. The list that I encourage women to have is much more self-focused and will give you way better information about who you're sitting across from. And so this list consists of questions like, how do I feel when I'm with this person? You know, when I share something that's important to me, how do I feel about their response? If I share something that's a little vulnerable, how do I feel about their response? You know, it's all about checking in with you and you know, do I feel like, you know, seeing this person again? Do I feel like we had a light and friendly time, or was it a little more sparky, you know? So those are the kinds of questions that you can actually start to delve into yourself with and will be a way better litmus test than does he drink red wine.
Wow. I'll tell you, quite honestly, that little bit of information is going to be used time and time again by me.
I hope so.
<You know?
laughs> I want women
Truly.
To burn their lists and put this one in their pocket.
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, you're right in the sense, you know, with because I have had and I've listened to a lot. I listen to a lot of radio too. So yeah, and whenever the discussion comes up, you know, when am I going to find Mr. Right or Miss Right, and you know, and a lot of times, you know, the response is kind of like, work on yourself, love yourself first. You know, I mean, some, you know, really valid information. But
yeah,
quite
absolutely.
Often it does come up with the having the list. You know, what is it that you want from your mate?
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
And you know, and of course they try to steer people away from physical attributes or, you know, those kinds of things. But your approach of focusing on, for the women, let's say, the woman to focus on herself as far as how she feels under certain circumstances, I mean, to me, that just, number one, it puts the woman first. You know, it puts you first, you know. It's like, hey, I'm important. I'm going to make sure that I get the right one for me, you know.
Nice.
And,
yeah.
it also takes the pressure off the other person, you know, as far as having
yeah.
to meet certain expectations.
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, one of the things that I did when I was dating, or that I found just sort of naturally happened, is that the more that I started that process of self-inquiry and what I felt and what was going on with me, the more I learned about what was really important to me when I was dating, and so my profile kept changing. Like, my profile on all my dating site, I tried every dating site, let me tell you. So
really?
All my profiles, yes, they became more and more defined about who I was. And the thing that I think deters a lot of women is they think that they have to attract as many men as possible. And I learned it was the opposite. It's like, all I need is one. Why do I want to attract a whole bunch? And the more defined that I can get about who I am, and the more that I can actually share who I am, then I can actually find somebody who meets me.
Yeah.
And that's the guy I want.
Yeah, so it's more about quality than quantity.
Right, right. If you're really looking for a mate, this isn't about stroking your ego and having a bunch of guys attracted to you. This is like, getting serious about who am I, what do I value, and can I find somebody that matches my values.
Yeah, very important. Now, with the online, I have to ask. I mean, I hadn't been, never been involved in that, but does the what's been your experience with the online scene as far as dating?
Well, I think it's just like most things; it's a double-edged sword. Like,
okay.
For one thing, I found it was a numbers game. Like, you do have to, look at 1,000 profiles before you can find 10 that you might send an email to, and then one that you might have a conversation with. So, one of the things that I always say to women is, don't give up, because like that 1 out of 1,000 does exist. And the other thing about it being a double-edged sword is one of the beautiful things is it gives us access to people that we normally wouldn't have. But on the other hand, if we're sitting in front of our computer, it stops us from going out and doing the things that we enjoy that fulfill us anyway, where you would normally meet somebody.
Yeah.
So, and I say the more you fulfill yourself, the happier you're going to be when you meet somebody. The more successful you'll be.
I can see, that double-edged aspect to it. And it's funny, I had one woman who... She was a medium, and she lives in Connecticut. And when she'd been on my show quite a few times, but she was in a marriage, got divorced, and when it came time to meeting her current husband, all of her friends kept saying, go out here, go there, do this. I mean, really encouraging her to do things that really weren't her. She was a stay-at-home lady. She was comfortable with, being at home, a homemaker. She loved her crafts, loved her cats, and that kind of thing. And her comments to her friends, I mean, she was rather steadfast in her belief that, if I'm to meet that one, he's going to meet me here, where I am, who I am. And sure enough, it ended up being one of her friend of a friend, came over during one dinner kind of thing, and boom, that was it. But she was a very strong proponent of living your life, as you want, which would in turn put you into contact with people who have similar interests or are more likely to have a same kind of frame of mind as you do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you are a person that likes to go out and you're sporty and you ski and you, mountain bike and like to jog and play tennis, and then, what's the use of going to a bar? Because you're going to meet people who drink, and like to party.
Right.
And that, if that's not your lifestyle, then, you're fishing in the wrong waters, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, your book, you have it kind of set in a Cinderella fantasy kind of setting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I would call the phase that I was in for a long time, was caught up in that Cinderella fantasy, because as little girls, even through Disney, we're taught, you spend a couple of hours reading a book and there's the prince and the princess and they have their troubles and they love each other but they can't get together, and finally in the end they get together and they live happily ever after. And, Hollywood movies have the same message. They live happily ever after. Nobody says, marriage is just a different circumstance with its own set of problems. Nobody says that. nobody wants to watch that in a movie. So I was really caught up in that. Like, I really thought that men were should be these one-dimensional, perfect people. And if they're not that way, then, I'm out of here because I want this perfect life. And I had to really start to have lots of big reality checks with myself and meet lots of three-dimensional men that have, pluses and minuses, and also accept the pluses and minuses of myself and realize that, okay, I'm not perfect, they're not perfect. What problems can I handle, and how can we, what are the most important things, and then what are the problems I can handle?
Yeah, that's something. Let's see, now we got about 5 more minutes before we're to a commercial break, and I do want to let those people listening know that if you'd like to call in and ask Marianne a question, you can call in at 619-789-4255. 4359. And for those of you who are in the chat room, if you would like to pose a question to Marian, feel free to type it in, and I'll be sure to do that. So your book is, again, what I could read on Amazon, it's, you have this, you know, kind of fantasy setup. It's about your journey through struggling to find that happy marriage and going through the relationships?
I mean, yes, it is my journey, and it also is a lot of other women's journeys, because I found that once I started to share that I was writing this book, so many other women opened up and shared their stories with me, and like some of them were just you know, heartbreaking. And so that was one of the things that I wanted to do in the book, is tell stories, because that's how we learn. We learn the best through storytelling.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a lot to be said. You know, one of the things I love about doing my inspirational shows is that, you know, even if a person hasn't had the exact same experience as a guest who has had struggle, they're similar, or there are components to the struggle that, mm-hmm. you know, the listener can relate to, you know, and it's that little common thread that really helps the individual.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I wanted to share a lot of women's stories, because there will be something in them that will, you know, just tug on your heart somewhere, or you'll be able to actually put your shoes into the experience of that person and kind of understand the framework of what they're going through and be able to apply it to yourself. So, yeah, it's important.
That's great. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and take our break. It'll be just under 3 minutes. And then when we come back, what I would like to do is I went through and highlighted, you know, several of the chapters in your book that kind of just stood out.
Nice.
And I'm sure there's a story, you know, behind them. So I mean, this way it'll give the listener a really good idea of you know, your book and all that kind of thing, too. So, okay?
Great. Sounds great.
Okay, great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hi, it's Maya at Mind Over Matter in Nyack, New York. I'd just like to take a moment to share with you how amazing I found Robert Sharpe's book, Joy Potential. It kind of found me at a time when I was feeling out of sorts and overwhelmed and, I guess, derailed by the pressures of my career and my large family and caregiving an ailing husband. I just really felt like my spark was dimming. It was a perfect time for me to pick up Joy Potential, because as I just in the first few pages began to read, I found that my frame of mind wasn't so different from others dealing with challenges and the trials and tribulations of life. I guess my first feeling was that I wasn't alone, and with that I began to open more to receive the message that Robert gave of light and love and positive thinking. That's what Joy Potential is all about. His thoughts are beautifully written, and everyone, whether you're going through your own personal challenges, should read it. His message was certainly well received from me, and I'm thankful for his insight and his caring and really helping me to get back on track. I think everyone should put Joy Potential on the top of their reading list. Love and light. Thank you.
For more information or to purchase your copy of Joy Potential, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me.
This is Roy Worley at mysticalship.com. R.P. Sharpe has done it again. His new book, It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, with Bite, B-I-T-E, being an acronym for Bringing Inspiration to Earth, has once again hit a home run. Unlike R.P. Sharpe's first book, Joy Potential, which was a uniquely original story containing a message of hope and inspiration for everyone regardless of where they happen to be on their personal spiritual path, It's No Secret is a compilation of awareness, insights, guidance, and wisdom that can help anyone navigate through their lives on a daily basis. It's No Secret also contains resources and references that enable a person to find expanded information on a variety of issues that affect all of us. Order It's No Secret today. I guarantee it will be a valuable resource for help with whatever your needs are.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, I do want to thank Maya for her Joy Potential testimonial and for Roy and my new book, It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites. That one is going pretty well here. We just released it about a week and a half ago and really got great sales. It's only 99 cents, the ebook. I want everybody to be able to afford it. It's insights that I've learned from the hundreds of guests I've had on and books I've read, as well as actions people can take to make their life better, which also led to the creation of a brand new calendar that's coming out, that is out, and it's called Dare to Dream in 2015. So anyway, all of those, the book and the calendar, are available at my website, www.biteradio.me. Just click on the picture of the product, and it'll take you directly there. So, okay, we're going to go back to today's show. Again, my very special guest today is Marion Baker, the love therapist and author of The Lime Green Plastic-Covered Couch. You can find out more about Marion, her book, her free videos, blog, and contact information by visiting her website, which is thelimegreenplasticcoveredcouch.com. And I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, we're back. Marion?
Hi, nice to be here.
Great, thanks. Well, I went through, like I said before the break, I went through in, excuse me, and kind of highlighted a few areas. And one of the things, you know, we talked about the dreaded list. You know, that was one of those I definitely wanted to cover, so that was a really good thing. But one of the things that you talk about, it's actually, you know, you talk about the first chapter of Prince Charming falling off his horse. Is that, you know, like you explained, is that when the man doesn't seem to follow through with that whole Prince Charming vision that's being promoted?
Yeah, the first time that your guy reveals himself to be a human being, you know, suddenly everything that you thought about him falls to the ground, and, you know, suddenly he's the ogre. So, like, one of the things that I tell women is that any time that you are thinking that your guy is either a prince or an ogre, it's time for a reality check. Because he's somewhere, you know, he's a human being that's lovable just as he is, and he's somewhere in the middle of all of that. But there's a guarantee that if you're thinking either one of those things, that you're stuck in some kind of fantasy.
Yeah. Well, excuse me. Well, you know, one of your other chapters was called Trading in the Rosy-Colored Glasses. So that is that kind of like that whole idea that we, you know, tend to maybe, well, I guess the ogre part wouldn't be so rosy, but
no.
but the prince part, you know, as far as, you know, having a maybe an over idealistic view of what, you know, a happy or successful relationship is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are stages in relationships, and the first one that you go through is usually that lovely, oh, he is a prince stage where, you know, he just looks like the perfect guy and he can do nothing wrong. And it's a great stage, and in fact, it's probably the reason that we actually can have relationships, because, you know, without that, if you're going in going, oh yeah, he's all right, you know, what fun is that? So
why,
yeah,
bother?
I mean,
yeah.
And then yeah, and then after that stage was where, like, I always got stuck in that stage, like, and it's what we learn as teens, like, you know, how girls have the puppy love crushes and all that kind of stuff. But, like, there's a point where you have to move beyond that stage to actually grow some roots in a relationship and take your romantic projections off what you think a man wants to be, and start to learn about who he really is, and then get in touch with yourself and start asking yourself how you feel about who he really is. That's when the reality check happens and where the rubber really hits the road.
Yeah. So with, I mean, you know, I think people go in with the idea of, you know, I'm going to go into this relationship and it's going to be the one. You know, this is going to be my first and last relationship. It's going to last me until the day I die, you know.
Uh-huh.
I like that.
Because,
exactly. Well, you know, I did too at one time. But, you know, it's, to me, is that an unrealistic projection when you try and if you're in the process of, you know, establishing a relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't, how do you know, like after, like even a big thing these days is after three dates, you're supposed to be having sex already. It's like, how do you know you're not having sex with a psycho killer after three dates?
Really?
You know, you don't really know somebody. You know, you don't really know people. And so the only way to establish and know if he's the one is actually to get to know this person and see who you are together and see if your values match and see if, you know, the things that are important to you are important to him, and see how you feel with him, and see how he feels with you. And you can't know that when you're still in the Cinderella fantasy phase. Like, you just can't know. So, yeah, you have to move beyond that.
Yeah, so now if we move beyond the fact of, you know, projecting or thinking that it's going to be the one, do we really kind of work toward, is it more of a this, I'm going to make it last as long as I can, or we want to go ahead and work together as long as we can? I mean, you know, is that a more realistic kind of, because I think when people are in the process of establishing a relationship, I think it's kind of natural to have a projection of, you know, mm-hmm. what life might be like with this person 10, 15, 20 years down the road. So is it, I'm going to basically see if I like this guy and if he makes me feel good, and then we'll take it one step at a time?
You know, every situation is a bit different, so it's hard for me to say, you know, it should go one way or the other, or you know, give it a year and see what happens. Like, each person is at a different level of readiness, and each couple brings their own, you know, things to a relationship. So, and you know, it's the big thing that a lot of people want to ask is, you know, how long is a healthy time, or how long should I give it, or you know, how do I know if it's right to leave? And you know, that's the one thing that I would say is the biggest question. And the answer I would give is to, you know, how do I know if it's right to stay or to leave? Is I think that's what you're ultimately asking,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll answer that anyway, and then if it's different, you can ask me something else. But what I say is, and my teacher taught me this, so the first time I heard it, I was like, what are you talking about? And I say, don't leave a relationship until you've shown up in it.
Hmm.
And when I heard that, I'm like, what do you mean? What does that mean exactly? And, you know, one of the things that women really have a tough time with is asking for their needs to be met. I just, you know, was listening to this audiobook called Women Don't Ask. And it's one of the reasons that we make, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that we don't make as much money as men, it's because we don't like to negotiate. We don't like to ask for our needs to be met. And so we go into relationships and we expect guys to be mind readers and expect them to fulfill our needs and make us happy, even though we're actually not telling them, you know, this is what would make me happy. And that's what I had to do with my husband when, you know, he proudly displayed his lime green couch. It's like, you know, and I knew this was my choice point. Again, you know, it comes back to choice points. Am I, in this moment, I feel like running, but am I actually going to share vulnerably with what's going on for me right now and, you know, tell him, A, what I'm thinking, B, can I ask for what I need, and can we have that kind of conversation? And it's when you are able to continually step into that you're actually mm-hmm. able to get closer and closer and closer, and then the relationship will just naturally evolve.
Yeah. Now, in a case, what if that lime green, you know, plastic covered couch scenario, or the sports memorabilia? What if at what point do certain things become, quote, deal breakers?
Yeah, I mean, if my husband had said no, like, this is the way that I need to live and I couldn't live any other way happily, and I knew that I couldn't live that way happily, that would have been a deal breaker for me.
Okay.
You know, each person is different. The trouble that we get into is when we say, okay, this is a deal breaker, and then the guy says, okay, well, that's too bad because I can't do that. And then we say, oh, well, okay. And then we live with them, but we resent it forever. It's like you really have to consider what's really true for you, because my teacher calls it moving your goalposts. It's like, okay, here's my goalpost. Here's where I'm standing. And the guy says, oh, no, okay, so then you move them out towards him, like you move them out 5 yards towards him so that he can kick the touchdown, when you're going, hey, wait a minute, I just lost myself here. So it's important that you know what the deal breakers are. And even though you might have strong feelings and lusty feelings for somebody, if they say, for example, you want to have children and they don't, you know, you got to think about that, because if you're not going to be fulfilled unless you have children, you know, you have to consider that.
Okay. Well, it sounds like it's really up to the individual to be real clear on what they need, what would make them happy, and try not to fool themselves into thinking that, well, I can live with blank, you know, whatever, when in fact, you know, like you say, may make them resentful for an entire relationship. So okay, well, one of the imagery that you use in your book a couple times in a couple different chapters is that of the glass slipper. What is the glass slipper, as far as your book is concerned, and how does that impact love relationships?
Yeah, I mean, the glass slipper in my mind represents the fantasy. You know, it's like there's that little glint. If you visualize a glass slipper, there's that little glint, and it's blinding. It's like, you know, you're stuck in the fantasy of what it is that you want, and any poor guy that comes along, you're gonna see that fantasy. You're gonna see him fitting into that fantasy, and when he doesn't fit, you know, suddenly that glass slipper is broken. And so, you know, it's a matter of figuring out where the realities are, and you know that it's a repeated theme, and one that I can't, you know, say enough about. Where's the reality? You know, it's one of the things that I tell women, especially if they're in relationships that are confusing, they're getting confusing mixed messages, or, you know, they just feel confused by what their guy tells them. Because a lot of guys come up with future promises. Oh, I'll do this when, or we'll have that when, or, oh, it'll be like this when. And what I tell them is take a snapshot of what is happening now. You know, what is happening right now, and could you live with this for the rest of your life? Because that's likely what's going to repeat itself. Not the fantasy, not what he says is going to happen. What's happening right now is what's going to repeat itself. So if he's got, you know, if he tells you, you know, I love you and I want to be with you and let's make this work, but his actions aren't congruent with that, you've got to take a look at that. You know, make sure what he says and what his actions are congruent. Or, you know, say a guy says, well, I love you, but I'm only available on Fridays from 7 to 9. My first question would be, well, does his wife know that?
Really? Okay. Yeah, that's funny. Well, okay. So, you know, it seems like, you know, one of the themes throughout the book is really for the woman to be just very self-aware of what it is that she wants. You know, who she is, first of all, I guess, really. That's primary, I guess, is really getting clear on who you are. And then what a relationship would look like fitting into who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So that comes down to, you know, what do I want? What are my values? What's really important to me? And does this person match those things? And that's like you just said, that's where the self-discovery comes in, and where you have to just continually check in and check in and check in. You know, is this what I want? Is this what I want? That's where internet dating actually can be the good side of the sword, because you can meet a lot of people and go, okay, so I like this and I like this and I like this about him, but I couldn't live with that. So it's sometimes a good litmus test for you to do some self-discovery.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have found quite often that, you know, people who have difficulty saying or identifying what they want really can get clarity by quickly identifying what they don't want, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. I don't know what I want, but I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's clear.
Yeah, very much
so. And
so
then what's the opposite?
Exactly. Now, you have one chapter that my imagination just kind of ran away with me, and it's called Free Milk and a Cow. But,
yes.
But,
yeah.
But I'm not going to let my imagination go, so.
Well, I mean, you're not a girl, so you probably didn't get your mother saying to you, don't give away the milk how does it go? I can't even remember. Don't give away the milk when you can get the cow for free or something. Or
yeah,
don't give away a cow when you can get the milk for free, something like that.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah,
that's a really important chapter, because what happens for us is we come away from our family culture and our culture as we're growing up with very, very subtle, specific messages that are ingrained in us that we have no idea we're even living out. We're either reacting against them or we're living them out. And so the way that I've helped women is I've created what I call a love-o-meter. And so if they are a love-o-meter, then, and it goes to 100, the degree that your parents could love you and could love, you know, the degree you had a family, supportive family environment that was loving, is a degree that your love-o-meter will be filled. So say out of 100, you had a pretty good family, so you filled it up to 50. So 50% of your love-o-meter is filled with, you know, loving, supportive you. And the guy that you're going to match is a guy whose love-o-meter is also at 50. So your family history and your family messages and your family culture play a lot more of a role in who you meet than what you think. And the catch is the other 50% is going to be filled with, you know, glommy, needy insecurities that is, you know, that's calling to be filled up with love. And so the opportunity in your relationship, if you can get somebody on the same path as you that wants to actually be supportive and be loving, and, you know, you can allow yourself to be vulnerable, you can start filling up that love-o-meter and having a new experience with your mate.
Wow, okay. Well, you know, I know that scene, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, I often wonder how much of our a family upbringing and, you know, societal kinds of training or thought patterns really play into our ability to attract and maintain a successful, loving relationship.
Mm-hmm. I'd say 100%.
Unless you
learn to do something different, like unless you find some kind of change agent that helps you, or, you know, you start doing a bunch of self-discovery, I would say it's pretty much 100%. You're going to either react to or live out your family history.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I personally, you know, because I've often wondered that. In my extended family, my relationship is longer than my parents, everyone in my complete extended family has never had one as long as me.
Oh.
So, yeah, so I guess I learned a few things.
You've learned to do something different. Good for you.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that would explain why you're doing a inspirational radio show.
yeah. Live and learn. And, yeah, I learned so much from my guests. So, anyway, and that's wonderful. Now, one of I truly love the Cinderella fantasy format for the book, because I think, you know, as you're going through and reading, sometimes the information can be that are presented can be really dry. And if you put it mm-hmm. in such a fun format, then, you know, I don't think that the message is lost by any means, you know. And so, but one of the topics that you talk about is trading in the pumpkin for a more reliable vehicle. I think, you know, that'd be a Frog and Prince kind of thing, or what's that?
Well,
all about?
I mean, a common complaint that I get from women is that a guy's mean. Oh, he says mean things, or he didn't treat me badly, and, you know, I'm the victim to him, or, you know, things like that. And I was watching Dr. Phil one day, because I watch how he works with couples, and I think he's great.
Okay.
But one of the things he said is there are no participants, no victims, just participants.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I teach women is that, because who doesn't say mean things once in a while? It's like, have you never been upset and said something nasty to your spouse? I mean, who hasn't done that? Or you know, or your boyfriend or your partner or whoever it is in your life. And so what I try to help women with is that to tell them that you teach people how to treat you.
Hmm.
And so, like, for example, like my writing my book has actually ruffled a few feathers in my family. So I was talking to my sister about it one day, and she was quite upset about, you know, some of the things I had to say, and you know, fairly, what's the word, critical, I would say. And so I was talking to my mom afterward, saying, my sister had been critical, and my mom said, because this is how my family operates, totally blinded by it. My mom said, well, why wouldn't you expect to be criticized by your family? And the old me would have gone, well, yeah, you're right, because, you know, that's what families do. That's what families do. But now that I've gone through my own, you know, decade of counseling, I was able to say to her, well, Mom, why couldn't I expect to be supported by my family?
Yeah. Wow.
And so so my family, and, you know, I'm not saying blaming my family, like, they're, you know, my mom's parents were that way, and their parents were that way, and their parents,
right.
You know, we all learn mm-hmm. it through our parents. And so now I'm going back in and saying, and, you know, because instead of letting everybody be critical, I'm going back and saying those kinds of things. So I'm, you know, essentially teaching, this isn't what I want anymore. I don't want a family that's critical. I want a family that's supportive.
Yeah. Well, very interesting. Yeah, you know, and I can completely relate to, you know, that critical family aspect. I mean, I had mm-hmm. one of the best negativity teachers that I have ever seen. And my mother,
yeah.
She was, you know, and it was interesting because, you know, when I went through and wrote my first book, the most criticism and negativity that I got was from family, and I was, and, you know, I guess I wasn't really surprised in a way. I mean, if it were my mother, I knew I wouldn't have been. But I mean, for siblings, you know, I was like, well, wow, you know, we used to kind of support each other there. But I tell authors now, anybody who wants to be an author, it's like, don't go to your family for the first, you know, input. You know, go to people who don't know you. You know, because you know, I think, you know, people carry a whole lot of, you know, baggage or you know, knowledge, or, you know, and so they kind of maybe see you as, you know, the teenager or the youngster or the little brat that did this, you know, that kind of thing, rather than someone who has gone through and lived a successful life, you know, making changes, you know, doing good things and that kind of thing. So anyway, So I often, you know, recommend to people who are writing, do not go to your family. But
anyway. Good advice. Good advice.
Yeah,
and you know the interesting thing about it is that if you actually, because this is one thing that I've got to do, is do some reality checks with my family and with people in my life. So, you know, when people do say something critical, I actually ask them, so what is your intention? What is it that you're, what is the message that you're trying to get to me? And what I'm finding, like, most of the time, is that people are actually trying to protect me.
Hmm.
So underneath a criticism, They're actually doing is trying to stop me from doing something that they think would hurt me.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, yeah, I'm a huge lover of A Course in Miracles, and one of the things that it says is there's never an absence of love.
Yeah.
And so even in the criticism or, you know, whatever it is, I'm learning to dig for the nuggets and finding, because then I can appreciate it. You know, it's like then I can say,
yeah.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. Thank you.
But not necessary.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
But then they also learn. Then they also learn, too, because then they can actually start saying what's underneath the criticism now, too, because the more I ask, the more they'll just automatically go to there. It's like, oh, you know, I'm scared you're going to get hurt if you go do that.
Yeah. Huh.
Instead of, don't do that, you're stupid, you know?
Yeah, I understand. And, you know, and it really does make a big difference if you can understand the intention behind the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've just, you know, when it comes to being an author, when you go through the first critical review, you know, or, you know, any kind of stabbing reviews, it's you do kind of want to look at what it is that they're saying. You know, when I had one woman that in a newspaper had said she was kind of disappointed with the ending of my book. You know, she was surprised and disappointed. And because she had thought that there was going to be one particular ending. Well, you know, it did have a surprise ending. So I was like, okay, well, no, that's okay. You know, that's okay because it was a surprise, you know. It was funny because it was one of my first ones that was from someone I did not know. And, you know, it was that learning experience of being able to kind of look at exactly what was being said, you know, and being honest with myself. And that was fine. You know, it's like, okay, you know, that's great. I'm glad that she, in a way, I'm glad she felt that way because she was really involved in it and really wanted it to be a certain way. But.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it depends on how you want to look at it, for sure.
Yeah, very much so. Well, gosh, Marion, we're down to the last 3 minutes. This is really, this hour has flown by. I know. There you go. This has gone fast. Oh, gosh. Well, I really enjoyed our conversation. You know, and like I say, there are so many women out there who sometimes are struggling, you know, trying to navigate. I mean, you know, it's a crazy world out there. Now, before we close, I think maybe if we would, you know, you mentioned that, you know, in your book that there were some kind of self-defeating patterns that you had. What would you say maybe are the top one or two types of self-defeating patterns that women utilize or employ that kind of nip that love bud, you know, nip that love in the bud?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of them is looking for a relationship to be the thing that fulfills you. Like I tell women, you know, look at a relationship like a child. There's you, your mate, and the third entity. So this third entity, if you've only been dating a month, it's a month old, how much do you expect your needs to be met by a month old baby? You know, they want a relationship because they want love and they want to feel appreciated and they want to feel all these things. But that's not what a relationship is actually for. If you can actually find that you can give love, give nurturing to the relationship, then the relationship grows up healthy and strong. So that's one pattern that I would say to look at. And the other is, I can't parrot enough the list. Throw away that list of expecting a guy to be a certain way and just start to tune into your feelings and let them lead you, and you can learn to trust those.
Great. Okay. Well, Marion, thank you for your time today. This has really been fun. And ever since I got your email saying that you wanted to be on Bite Me Radio, I knew that I was looking forward to this day. So I really appreciate your time.
Me too.
All right.
Thank you so much. It's been a blast.
Great. Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Marion Baker, and she is author of The Lime Green Plastic-Covered Couch. And you can find out more about Marion and her book, blog, free videos, all of that, by visiting her website, which is the limegreenplasticcoveredcouch.com. And I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.